Right, let's start our next session on the marriage and family class here at the International School of the Word. And in this particular lesson, we're going to talk about God's plan for a happy life. And how many of you want a happy life? I think all of us would agree with that. And every country, whatever you're watching from, I think all of us would agree that that's the ultimate goal, is to have a happy life. Well, God has a recipe for that. And it's found in the book of Ecclesiastes. So one of the things that Solomon says in the book of Ecclesiastes is a statement that he makes over and over and over. He says, don't live your life trying to grasp the wind. So I want everybody to just kind of grab some wind right now with your hand. Can you do that? We know it's impossible, right? Even if the wind is blowing, even if you're in a tornado, you cannot grasp the wind. But he says, unfortunately, there's a lot of people living their life trying to do that very thing. They're living their life pointlessly, that everything they're reaching for can't even be caught. So he talks about, one version of the Bible says chasing the wind. So if you like that metaphor better, I think both of them work well. You're either chasing the wind or you're grabbing the wind, but you know that if you chase the wind, you're never going to catch it. And if you're grabbing the wind, you're never going to hold on to it. So Solomon says, don't live your life trying to chase the wind. In Ecclesiastes 1:17, listen to how he says this, and I'll give you two versions of this. It's according to which version of the Bible that you're using. And I set my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceive that this is also grasping for the wind. All right, then he says again, this is the New International Version, the same version, or the same verse rather. Then I applied myself to the understanding of wisdom and also to the madness, to madness and folly. But I learned that this too is a chasing after the wind. So which metaphor works best for you? I think both of them are saying the same thing. You can't catch it and you can't hold on to it. So what is it in life that you're trying to hold on to that is making you so unhappy? Because God is going to tell us in this lesson that there's only five things that can make you happy. Did you know that? Only five things in the whole world that give you fulfillment, and we're going to see what those are. Now, the book of Ecclesiastes is somewhat controversial because the author doesn't name himself. He actually calls himself the preacher or the teacher, and he also calls himself the son of David, king of Jerusalem. Some believe that it's a collection of quotes, much like the book of Proverbs. Some even argue that it's a translation from another book into Hebrew language. I think this is very unlikely. Personally, I think that's an unlikely idea because it's given that it has been canonized and protected by God, priests, kings, and scholars, and put into the canon of the Bible. I don't think it's a foreign book translated into Hebrew. One of the most common consensus is that it is the writings of King Solomon, some would even say on his deathbed, or near the end of his life. And that is the consensus that I hold. So I believe that the book of Ecclesiastes was written by King Solomon, who identifies himself as the teacher, the preacher, the son of David, the king in Jerusalem, which he did refer to himself that way many times. I believe this is King Solomon, but not the young King Solomon, not the wise King Solomon. This is King Solomon at the end of life. Now think about the things he did. The temple he built, the cities he built, this man overlaid his doors with gold in the palace. This is the King Solomon that had trained peacocks that walked around and served drinks on their backs in his courts. That is why the Queen of Sheba said, I heard about the splendor of Solomon, but when I saw it, even the half have not been told. We're talking about the wisest king, the greatest king, other than King David that ever lived for the nation of Israel. So this is the rich man Solomon, the wise man Solomon. But at the end of his life, he looks back on all of these buildings and these 700 wives, and he looks back on all of these things he's done, and he says, you know what? None of that really made me happy. And so he begins to write a lament. And to be totally honest with you, if you just sit down and read the book of Ecclesiastes from front to back, it will depress you because it makes it sound like nothing is good. I went to the courts and all I saw was injustice. I built buildings and they didn't, you know, they felt good for about 2 days. And then after that, it was over. And I went to the church and I saw injustice in the church. So he's writing this lament about everywhere I looked, I saw something wrong with people. And it makes you think like the world has gone mad. The world is crazy. And he even says, King Solomon even writes, he says, much learning will make you mad. I don't think he meant make you crazy. I think he meant make you mad. The more you find out, the more angry you get. And he said, the more I learn about human nature, the more I despise humans. The more I learn about all of these things we're grasping after, the more I hate it. So here is the old king on his deathbed writing this long lament. But in the midst of that lament, we see these windows of hope because he begins to tell us about the things in life that can actually make you happy so that you don't spend your life chasing after the wind, trying to grasp the wind. Here's what we do know for sure about Ecclesiastes. It is a book that tells you how to live your life, the life that you've been given to its fullest. He lists only 5 things and 1 more thing. So we'll have 6 in our list at the end. The 6th one is basically about keeping life in balance. But he lists only 5 things in this life that can make you happy. The rest, he exclaims, is like chasing after the wind. So again, we see this phrase repeated over and over and over. I've seen all the works that are done under the sun, and indeed all is vanity like grasping after the wind. I set my heart to know wisdom and know madness and folly, and I perceive that that is also like grasping after the wind. So he's saying working is like trying to chase the wind. Trying to know more, trying to get more education, it's like chasing after the wind. Then he says, and I looked at all the works of my hands, all the things I've done and the labor that I've toiled. And indeed, it was vanity, like chasing after the wind. I saw no profit in it. I've worked myself to the point of being tired, and now I'm mad because I did it. I mean, how many people do you know that walked away from a job with a gold watch and they said, see you later. 2 weeks later, someone else was in that position and no one ever remembered their name. It was like, man, do you know how many sacrifices I made? I can tell you, man, even from pastoring for 31 years of my life, you can almost die in the trenches. But when you're gone, you're gone. That's just what it looks like. Somebody else takes your place. Someone else steps up and then you're history. And that's how life works. People just move on faster than we wish they would sometimes, but they just move on. And so he's saying, I looked at life and I thought I would be happy and I worked all the time. And you know how many sacrifices I made on my job only to find out at the end, it was just work. Thank the Lord they paid me for it because no one even remembers what I did. They don't even see what I did. He says, I hated life. Have you ever just woke up one day feeling that way? I hated life because of the work I had done under the sun. It was distressing for me. Okay, let's just be honest. How many of you have ever woken up at least one day of your life and think, I hate life. I just would rather be anywhere else. I'd rather be anybody else. But I don't know who I would like to be because I don't know anybody I want to be. And I don't know where I'd want to be because I think I'd be miserable wherever I was. That's why David, you know, in his distress, hiding from King Saul, says, man, if I could just turn into a dove and fly away on the wings of the wind, I would just go where nobody knows me and start over. Well, sometimes that's just how life feels. You've got King David saying that. And now you have King Solomon, the wisest man that ever lived, saying the same thing. So if that was all we got out of Ecclesiastes, we wouldn't be including that in a marriage class. Because how many of you know this would not be good information about living your life? Then he begins to open up with his great wisdom in all these years and tell us what is not like grasping for the wind. He says, again, I saw that for all the toil and skillful work, Again, I saw that for all toil and every skillful work, a man is envied by his neighbor. It's also vanity. It's like chasing after the wind or grasping for the wind. The fool folds his hands and consumes his own flesh. Better a handful of quietness than both hands full, together with toil and grasping for the wind. I returned and I saw vanity under the sun. There was one alone without a companion. He has neither son nor brother. There's no end to his labors. He's never satisfied with his paycheck. But he never asked, for whom did I do all this work for? He said, it's a grave misfortune. I did all this work and I just got a little paycheck and now it's done. It's over. It was just, do you know how many hours, do you know how many mornings I got up early and how hard I worked and it's just over? And so you can feel the anger in his voice when he says this. So listen to what he says. I'm giving you the bad news before I give you the good news. He says, in my opinion, this is from the Living Bible. I thought it would be fun to just break one out of there because it just speaks so plain. So from the Living Bible, in my opinion, nothing is worthwhile. Everything is futile. For what does a man get for all of his hard work? Generations come and go, and it makes no difference. Sounds like a madman to me. He says, but in the midst of all of this, I have found treasures that I want to impart to you. And he's going to give you this first piece of advice, and he's going to give you five things that if you do these five things, no matter how hard you work and what you do with life, you will end up with a very happy and fruitful life at the end with no regrets. Well, fewer regrets maybe. So he starts with this. To everything there's a season, a time for every purpose under heaven, time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to be plucked up, what is planted, a time to kill, a time to heal, a time to break down, a time to build up, a time to weep, and a time to laugh, a time to mourn, a time to dance, a time to cast away stones, a time to gather stones, a time to embrace, a time to refrain from embracing, a time to gain, a time to lose. Keep that in mind. You can't always gain. Sometimes you do lose, but that doesn't mean that's the end of your story. You will gain also. A time to throw away. Some people need to learn that lesson, don't they? There's a time to throw some things away. There's a time to tear and a time to sow. A time to keep silent. Some people need to learn that lesson. And some people need to learn the next lesson. And there's a time to speak, right? A time to love, a time to hate, a time for war, a time for peace. So what he's saying is the first thing you have to understand if you want to have a happy life is there's this balance of life. Don't put all of your hope in one day or one season or one moment. Your life is going to ebb and flow. Your marriage is going to ebb and flow. Okay, so I know that many of you are watching this from around the world, so you have to answer this, but I have a room full of people that I want to answer this. How many of you have ever thought that there were days that you were never going to get the kinks worked out of your relationship? Let's just be honest, all right? There are days, and so my wife and I, we're the first two to raise our hands. There were days we thought we're never going to get the kinks worked out of relationships, but how many of you know you got them worked out and you're still here, right? So that's the ebb and flow of life. How many of you thought some days raising your children, I am doing everything wrong? Okay, now every parent in the room just raised their hand. And then how many of you figured after a while, wow, I was doing better than I thought because they actually learned a lesson from that and they're coming back later. My wife loves it when our daughters who are now married with children come back and say, Mom, I'm sorry for every time I did that and every time I said that. So she's now getting those nice little thank you notes that she never got raising teenagers and adolescents in their adolescent years. She didn't get that. But now that they have kids of their own, they're thinking, oh my goodness, what was I thinking? Life just moves that way. You can go from broke to rich overnight or from rich to broke overnight. You can go from happy to sad. Your moods can swing. So don't put everything into what's going on in your life right now. There has to be a balance to life. So in that balance, he's going to tell you five things that can make you happy. Here's the first one. Enjoy your work. Now, why would he say that? When he just got through saying, work, 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 and there's nothing good for it. There's no profit in it. There's no pleasure in it. He's talking about working a job that you don't like doing. He says, if you want to be happy, stop doing a job you hate. The money's not worth it. No one's going to remember it. And at the end of your life, you're just going to be mad at yourself because you spent that many miserable days working. He said, when in fact, you can work a job that you love. My wife and I have a couple of dear friends in St. Louis. They were all stressed out in life. He had a job he hated. He was in sales and it was just all pressure and never knew how much money he was going to make and the type of sales, type of market he was in. It was just always living in pressure. And she also had a job that she was stressed out in. And one day they came to us and they said, I don't want you to think we've lost our mind, but we're both quitting our jobs to do something we enjoy. She says, I'm going to make a lot less money, but I love playing the piano. And I'm taking a job as a piano teacher at a music store so I can just be around music every day because I love music. I won't make as much money. The benefits aren't as good, but I'm going to be happy in this job. And the guy came to us, he said, and by the way, I'm going to take a job driving a courier truck because I don't like people anymore. And this is really what he said. I'm tired of the public. I don't like people. I want to be alone. And in this truck, it's just me and my music every day. And I can listen to sermons and music and I don't have anybody to tell me what to do. I just have to deliver everything on time. And you know what? That's exactly what they did. And they're both still in those jobs. I think they've retired now, but they work those jobs to the rest of their life because of this one principle. Why work a job you hate when you're going to be spending 8 miserable hours a day? And what kind of mood are you going to come home in when you have hated everything you've been doing all day long? Do a job you love. So he says, what profit has the worker from that which he has labors? I have seen the God-given task with which the sons of men have been occupied. He has made everything beautiful in its time. He has put eternity in their hearts, except that no one can find out the work that God does from the beginning to the end. So in other words, the work that you're doing, the purpose you've been created for, you're not going to understand it all at one time. It's from living life you're going to understand. So I know that nothing is better for them to do than to rejoice and do good in their lives, and that also every man should eat, drink, and enjoy the good of all of his labor. It is a gift from God. So here's his principle. He says, why work a job that makes you miserable when it's going to make your family miserable? Just for money? Not worth it. Just for benefits? Not worth it. You can get similar benefits, maybe different kind of money, doing something you enjoy doing. So he says, if you want a happy life, you want a happy family, you want a happy marriage, do something you like to do, that you look forward to it every day. You know, our editor here at ISO is Matt, and Matt tells me on an ongoing basis, I get to do what I love to do every day. I don't know many people that would like staring at a computer, correcting documents all day long, putting in punctuation, and especially when I wrote something. You know, I can't imagine them because I just write drafts. I don't take the time to edit. I'm getting my thoughts out on paper, and then I shoot the paperwork to them, and I say, fix it, make it look good, dress it up for me, because I don't want to take that. I'm on to the next thing, and I'm writing something else. Some people would absolutely hate doing a job every day where you're just staring at a computer, putting in commas and taking out comma splices and you know, changing a few words here and there and making it look good. But he loves that job. And I'm so glad he loves that job. But he tells me all the time, I really like to do this job. Believe it or not, I enjoy English. I enjoy editing. And I'm glad he does because I don't. I love teaching. I love doing what we're doing here today. I love researching and studying and training and mentoring and, you know, raising up leaders. That's what I love to do. And I'm getting to do what I love to do. If I had to stop this and become a brick mason like my grandfather, I would do it to feed my family. But I can promise you, I wouldn't enjoy it. I wouldn't do it, but I would be willing to do it to take care of my family. So here's the principle. Why work a job you hate that makes you miserable when you know it's affecting all the relationships in your life? Why not, even if you have to make a career change, do something you enjoy doing with your life so you can look back on it and say, you know what? Maybe they didn't pay me what I was worth, and maybe they don't even remember my name, but I sure had a lot of fun doing that job. I enjoyed it. I had a lot of fulfillment, personal fulfillment doing that job. I just want to say this in plain English. Don't sell your soul to the store. The store will not love you back. It never will. Don't give up your family for your job. Don't put your marriage at risk working hours that you don't even get paid well for. Because I promise you this, one of these days you're going to be so mad about that because it's not worth it. It really isn't worth it. I speak from experience, and I speak from talking to thousands of other people in this world who have told me very similar stories. One of these days, you're going to finish your work and you're going to want to leave a legacy, but you're going to realize that legacies are a lot harder to leave than you think. If you don't write something, if you don't create something, if you don't make something, it's harder to leave a legacy with influence. It can be done. The reason we have this Teal Lowry building here is this is part of his legacy, but he left this building. His name's all over the building. Now we have his gallery. But if this wasn't here, I don't know who would be telling his story the way we're telling the T.L. Lowry story. So leaving a legacy is a lot more difficult than we might think unless you do it through family. Through family, through people, through friendships, through children. You can leave a great legacy if you influence children because they'll be doing things your way from now on. That's a great way to leave a legacy. But doing a job is a hard way to leave a legacy. So keep in mind that you need to do something you love or you may be living a life you hate. But if you live a life you love, you need to work a job you love. I just want to say thank you to all of our ministry partners who help us take the gospel around the world and train pastors and leaders around the world. Because of you, we have been able to do so much for the kingdom and expand the kingdom of God. I was able to train over 5,000 church planters just in the country of India alone. We've worked all through Africa as well as Europe. Every year I go to Romania and train pastors, and we've trained hundreds of pastors there in Romania. We've graduated over 3,000 pastors from programs, certificate programs, just in Central America. Our teams and the young men and women that I've taken on the field with me, numerous young ministers who I just want to give them experience and help them to get their feet wet in ministry. We have gone around the world spreading the gospel, and none of this is possible without you. I just want to say thank you for your continued support, whether it's a one-time donation of any size or whether it is a monthly donation that you've decided to partner with us monthly. I just want to say thank you for that. And for those of you that are looking for ways to give to this ministry, because it is a good seed to sow in and we're doing things around the world, here's a screen that would tell you some easy ways that you can give to this ministry. But once again, I just say thank you from the bottom of my heart and from all of those lives that you are changing. It is my honor to be your ambassador to the world. All right, here's the next thing. I'm so glad this one was in here. Enjoy your food. Nothing is better for a man than he should eat and drink and that his soul should enjoy the good of his labor. I saw all this was from the hand of the Lord. So enjoy your food. Now, one of the things that is destroying families is we've stopped eating together. Listen, we don't need to just eat together. We need to cook together. And one of the reasons I love holidays at our house is because when my kids get there and my sons-in-laws get there, we all get in the kitchen. Now, my wife, she's the manager of the house and she's the manager of the kitchen. But some of us are chopping and some of us are mixing and some of us are baking and some of us are making this and we're all in there. It's loud, it's chaotic, and I love it because it feels so alive. It makes the house feel so alive. We're on top of each other. We're bumping elbows. We're laughing. We're joking. And sometimes somebody gets something slung on them and there's a small little food fight, not a big one because she wouldn't allow that, but there's a small little food fight and we're having fun. If you're one of those who runs everybody out of your kitchen so that you can prepare the perfect meal, you might be missing the point. The whole point is camaraderie. The whole point is the togetherness of being in this room together and doing fun things together and then sitting down and eating that meal together. You don't want to slave over your food and then everybody goes into a different room and eats it. I mean, how many cooks have been insulted this way, right? You put all this hard work into it, and you got this guy over there in front of a ball game, and this guy sitting outside eating by himself, and somebody else took it to the bedroom. Then you're just sitting there in a corner eating by yourself. Food is meant to be enjoyed. It's not just to keep us alive. Enjoy your food. Enjoy making it. Enjoy eating it. Enjoy growing as a result of it. Hopefully not too much. That part you may not enjoy as much, but enjoy your food. Make family mealtime an event. Because one of the things that's killing us now is we don't do that anymore. We just grab a bite to eat, or we just throw something in the microwave, and we turn on the TV, and we sit and watch the news, and we don't talk, and we don't have family table experiences. I can tell you, one of these days you'll miss that. If you haven't already missed it, one of these days you won't have anybody on the other side of the table and nobody to get on your nerves, nobody to kick you under the table, nobody to cook for, and then you're going to realize how valuable that time really was. So enjoy your work, but also enjoy your food. That's what he says. Enjoy love. Listen to what he says. Enjoy joyfully with the wife whom you love all the days of your vain life. Isn't it funny how he phrases this? Live joyfully in your vain life is what he's saying. You know, Solomon only fell in love one time that we know of. He married 700 women, but all of these were business deals. They were. That's just how you created allies in that world. They married the king or one of the king's kids. All these princesses came, and that's how he joined with armies and got allies. It was just the way they did things in their day. I don't know how much of a real marriage any of that was. But Solomon wanted to know what marriage looked like or what love looked like. So that is the reason the Song of Solomon appears. So the Song of Solomon is the story of the king who disguised himself. If you've ever read the Song of Solomon, it's the story of these girls out in the field, and they're talking about which boy they want to marry. And the girls all say, well, I want to marry the king. I'm hoping the king brings me into the house. And this Shunammite girl says, you know what? I've changed my mind about all that because I fell in love with a shepherd boy. And I'm going to be content with that because this is real love. And she says, I saw him peeping through the lattice at me the other day. He is sending me notes. He told me that my hair looked like a flock of goats coming down the mountainside. Now that may not sound very romantic to you, but it sure made her feel good. And my teeth look like ivory tusks from an elephant. So, you know, I got elephant teeth and goat's hair, and I got hips like rams, but hey, I'm working it. So maybe their romantic language isn't what we're used to seeing, but what she was saying is, this boy's flirting with me. And she describes all these little things he's doing. He's peeking at her through the lattice. He's chasing her. They're setting up little secret times to go out and talk. And then he proposes. And she says to all the other girls, you know, you marry the king if you want, but I'm going to marry this shepherd boy because I have fallen in love. And he's in love and I'm in love. And this poor shepherd girl is out there and she marries the shepherd. They go into her mother's house and consummate the relationship. They get married under an apple tree. So they go into the apple tree, they get married, and they go in her mother's bed, and they consummate the relationship. And when the relationship is consummated, they go back in the living room, and her mom says, yay, you're married. I got this nice little shepherd son-in-law. And he says, I want to break some news to you. Yeah, I know that you think you fell in love with a shepherd, but really, I'm not a shepherd. I'm actually the king. And I disguised myself so I would know what love felt like. And I now know what being in love and falling in love is like. I want you to move out of this house into the palace. And even though there's 700 women that say they belong to me, you're the only one I love. And so Solomon can say this, you can be joyful if you can just fall in love. And of course, Song of Solomon is a portrait of God's courtship with us. It's God's courtship with Israel. I mean, it's a beautiful story, but it's the story of the king who disguised himself to fall in love. So now he says, live joyfully with the wife whom you love all these days of your vain life. And this word joyful literally means to stare at. So, I mean, it means every time I look at you, I just get happy. That's what it means. So to fall in love means you're gazing at something. Have you ever been in love with someone or something and you couldn't stop looking at it? Maybe a new car. Hopefully you don't love a car because those sort of break down on you in a heartbeat. But have you ever been in love with somebody or maybe a baby that was born or just when you got married and you just couldn't stop yourself from looking at them thinking, man, this is mine. You're mine. We're together, you're mine. There's nothing like falling in love. I mean, it really should be described as joyful because the level of joy that goes up in true love is unprecedented. And he says, this is your portion in life. Look at this, listen to the language here. You can work. You're gonna do all kinds of things. Life's gonna have ebbs and flows. You're gonna see injustices everywhere. But you know where you're gonna find real happiness? When you fall in love with somebody that even when the world's falling apart, you're holding their hand. Even when life doesn't give you what you think it should have given you, you're still holding their hand. Even though the people around you have forsaken you, they're still holding your hand. And falling in love is one of the five things that can make you happy. So work a job that you love, enjoy your food together, and fall in love to the point of that you just can't take your eyes off of them. All right? And look at this one. Ecclesiastes 8 and 15. So I commended enjoyment because a man has nothing better under the sun than to eat, drink, and be merry. Where do you think that phrase comes from? Eat, drink, and be merry. It's right from King Solomon's wisdom. A merry heart a merry spirit does the heart good like a medicine. So he's saying, find you some friends that like to laugh. Now I can tell you about our family and about my life with my redhead is that life has not been perfect. We have had our trials like everybody else in life, and we've had some seasons that were difficult, but there's one thing we have never stopped doing, and it happens almost every single day at our house, is we laugh. That doesn't mean we belly laugh and lay on the floor and kick our feet and laugh. But we find humor in the silliest things of life. We have learned that some things in life just need to be laughed at. Some people in life just need to be laughed about. That doesn't mean you're insulting them because, you know, you're not going to do it in front of them unless, I know, you're saying that you're going to laugh behind their back. Yes, we do. Because if we did it in front of them, it would hurt their feelings. So we're not going to laugh in front of them. We're going to laugh about them when they're not looking because we all have silly antics. And believe me, I know people have laughed about me before. Thank the Lord, I can just add a little joy to your life. So that's what life is about. You got to have a little fun. But you also need some friends that are just crazy friends. I mean, if your life is just always serious, let's be honest, who just wants to talk about problems all the time? Who just wants to deal with the downside of life? Who wants to be in a relationship where it's like, well, I don't know if I'm going to be able to make it through the day. I just don't feel good. I mean, who wants to be in that? It's okay for a day or so. It's okay for a week. It's not okay for a lifetime. It's not okay to live your whole life with somebody that can't even, you know, have a good day. Sometimes you got to find some crazy friends. We have a few friends in life that our connect. We got to spend 2 weeks ago, we got to see almost all of them at the same time on the same weekend. We have some friends that we call crazy friends. Now, these crazy friends are just people that are a party waiting to happen. When we see each other, we start laughing and we don't even know why, because the way we even change our voices when we talk to each other, it's not that we're trying, it's just the way we do it. We see each other, we start talking abnormal because it's, you have friends like that, you kind of change your voices, and I mean, it's just fun stuff. And we have some friends like that. And a couple of weeks ago, I was speaking at a convention down in Georgia, and a couple of our friends were there that are just like that. And they met us at the car. Before we even got the luggage out of the car, we were already laughing to the point that our bellies were hurting. We hadn't even gotten in the place we were staying yet. And then we hooked up the next night with a different set of friends that are the same way for us, and we laughed the night away. It was amazing. And you have to have friends like that. We've got a couple of friends in St. Louis that her name is Charmaine, is one of them. And she is just one of our fun friends. I mean, when we get around Charmaine Bridgman, she just makes us laugh out loud. In 5 minutes, I mean, we can't even be in her presence for 2 or 3 minutes that she doesn't have us laughing out loud. And if I ever have her here at ISO, you will know why, because she'll have you laughing in 5 minutes. She's just fun. You need people in your life like that. Don't live your life so serious all the time, meeting deadlines and schedules and checklists, and oh my goodness, you're gonna wake up miserable one day. Hear me. You work a job you hate. You eat food you hate. You can't find anything to love. You're gonna wake up miserable one day. Enjoy life. There are things in life that can make you happy. So enjoy laughter and fun is what he says. And I'm sure you're not surprised to see number 5 on here. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God, keep his commandments, for this is man's all. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. So he's saying, at the end of the day, put your hope in God, put your trust in God, and enjoy God. You need to enjoy your work. You need to enjoy your spouse, enjoy the wife of your youth. You need to enjoy your food. You need to enjoy laughter and fun, but you also need to enjoy the Lord. You need to love worshiping. You know, that's honestly, I have to be totally honest in life. Honest with you about this. I love worship as much as I love anything in this world. There is something about that. In our house, we talked in our first session about creating the environment. One of the things you'll hear every day in our house is worship music playing. I mean, every day of our life. This morning, getting ready, I had Eddie James album, his Yearn album playing, and he was crying, and I was, you know, worshiping on my way here. And I go in the next room, and Faith's got another worship set in another room playing. She's in there having her time with the Lord, because you have to enjoy the Lord. It can't just be, you know, always walking in fear and legalism and regulation, and God's going to get you for that. You have to enjoy the Lord. That's why some people are so miserable in church and so miserable as a Christian. They're not enjoying the Lord. You know, I have a philosophy in life, and I know ISO, we teach a lot of people of different types of religions. So I'll just say this is my preference. I know you can get to heaven in a lot of different paths. I mean, only Christ, but there's Baptist and Methodist and Presbyterian paths and other paths, you know, that will get you to heaven, and you're going to get saved. And if you get saved, you're going to get in heaven. But I'll tell you what, one of the reasons I love being a Pentecostal is because I think we just get to have a little more fun on the way to heaven. I think our worship is just a little more fun. That's just my preference. I think just the fact that we're emotional, we're experiential, the fact that we can cry and laugh and dance and raise our hands and just we can express ourselves. To me, that just makes life a little bit more enjoyable. And that makes my relationship with God. I haven't always had a relationship like that with the Lord. There are seasons in my life where it was more rigid and more cut and dry. And it was just rules and regulations. And why do that when you can enjoy the presence of the Lord? He can be your best friend. He can be the friend who sticks closer than a brother. He can be the person that you can talk to when you can't talk to anybody else. He can be your comfort, your strength, your guide, your lighthouse. I mean, we can go on and on. but all the multifacets of God and what He brings to your life. So enjoy God. So here's the summary of what we've talked about. First of all, keep life in balance. No one wants to end up living the grasping the wind story that he paints so vividly. He said, keep life in balance. Enjoy your work. Enjoy your food. Enjoy love. Enjoy laughter and have some fun. And enjoy God. And he said, if you do those things, this is God's plan for you to have a happy life. I hope you enjoyed this lesson, and we'll see you in the next session.